AI is not meant to do every single type of task there is, right? So that's an important thing to know is it's a tool that's meant to get you from point A to point B.
I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. There is much to celebrate this week as the Dan Smolin Podcast reaches an important milestone, our 100th episode. And we could not have reached it without scores of great guests offering their thought leadership on a future of work doing meaningful work. But most of all, we could not have crossed 100 episodes without you. So thank you for supporting this podcast with your continued listenership and enthusiasm. Now, as more companies welcome back people who, since March of 2020, have worked remotely, we consider how artificial intelligence will now factor into their future of work. Artificial intelligence, or AI, frightens many in the workforce who fear that millions of jobs, including theirs, may disappear because companies will turn to robots to do the work. And truth be told, millions of low-skilled jobs likely will go away, for AI can do many tasks faster and virtually error-free. But on the bright side, AI will open people to doing work that robots cannot do, and that's work with a heart, work that depends on human touch and emotion. To help us understand AI's impact on the future of work, we turn to Pratik Joshi. He is the founder and CEO of Pluto Shift, a company which uses AI to help solve the world's biggest problems, including our shortage of potable water. Pratik explains what AI is, how it differs from machine learning, the skills and attributes he looks for in new hires, and what he does each day to remain focused at work and happy in life. I spoke with Pratik Joshi in April 2021 over Zoom. Pratik Joshi, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here, my friend. Hey, before we get started, I was wondering if you could tell our audience about Pluto Shift. What is it, and what is your role in the company?
I'm Pratik Joshi. I'm the CEO of Pluto Shift, and we are headquartered in Palo Alto, California. And Pluto Shift is an operational data platform. What it means is it's a tool to monitor physical infrastructure. And it's built for companies that make physical goods, like food and beverage and chemicals, manufacturing, so on and so forth. So we help them keep an eye on it by using the data they're already collecting.
So a lot of what you do revolves around artificial intelligence. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
I'm wondering if you could share with us, for those that don't know what artificial intelligence or AI is, how you would define that. And beyond that, how do you contrast it with machine learning?
To me, AI is the ability of a machine to perform tasks that require human intelligence. And AI is like a state of existence. And an AI system can make decisions on its own. Now, how those decisions are made, there are many different frameworks to do that. But at the core of it, it's an ability that we can instill into a machine by providing a framework on how a decision gets made.
We're not a technology podcast. We're a future of work podcast. And so much of the future of work narrative is around AI and all the jobs that people think are going to go away because AI is going to make those jobs obsolete. What's your take on that?
I don't think that people will be eliminated. I mean, people will always be needed. I think they'll what's more likely is, on average, people will be reassigned, because whenever there's a change in the way work gets done, there'll always be a shift in the skills that we need to achieve that. And so the work that needs to be done will still be done. And it's more like a tool like ML, machine learning. Well, it'll be a tool to prioritize that work. Meaning, if a single person is responsible for 100 tasks, not all 100 are equally important on that day, right? So kind of ML can help me get to the top three that need my attention today. So I think it's more like a tool that will be used to do that. For example, I don't think there's merit in having somebody do repetitive work in Excel, right? A simple machine can, if the goal is to compute the sum or difference or any such operation, a tool can automate that work so that we can focus on using the output of the tool to prioritize what we call like higher quality tasks. That's the way I look at it.
I heard something this week, and I was wondering if you heard the same, that we are now generating more data that becomes actionable information by way of artificial intelligence than by way of human intelligence. Is that true?
Yeah, it's. I think the data already exists, right? So what we're getting better at is instrumenting the world around us so that we collect that data. Meaning, the pressure, the temperature, all the data already exists, right? So now we have sensors that are low cost. So we instrument our world to say that, okay, that the pressure on that pump is X. Now what can I do with that to drive some action? So we are getting better at collecting the data. And now as the volume of data increases, we need more tools that can handle higher volume. Meaning, a human can handle 10 numbers, but what if we have 10 million numbers, right? It's a human can't possibly keep up. So that's where a tool comes into play, where we are gathering more data. We are getting better at collecting higher volumes of data. And then we are getting better at building tools to call it, you know, wrangle and crunch that data to extract what we want out of it. So it's, I think that's what's happening, is the volume of data and the tooling both are getting better. And AI is obviously, you know, that's AI is a tool, right? To just make sense of that data.
Many years ago, in a previous life, previous to me being an executive recruiter, I was involved in digital marketing. And among the many things that I did was capturing, reading, analyzing, and presenting marketing insight. And so this is back a long, long time ago. I would sit with Green Bar. For you youngins out there, this is what we used to use, this stack of green and white paper that was perforated, and we would read our raw data and then tally it up and come up with some magical insight that we could use for a marketing end. But this machine, sometimes if I didn't have enough coffee or enough sleep during the day, would invert numbers, right? AI doesn't typically do that, correct?
Right, yeah. That is true. Yeah, I think it's, and that's the one of the advantages, is it doesn't get bored, right? So it doesn't, because it's, and also it doesn't make mistakes, in the sense that no matter how many numbers you add up, it'll always compute the right sum. Humans are prone to errors, meaning, as you said, if we get tired, if we are tired someday, we are overworked towards the end of the day, we are a little more likely to make some computing mistake, right? So I think AI, obviously there are many pros and cons to it, but one definite advantage is it doesn't get bored, and it keeps going over and over and over again.
Okay, so it doesn't typically make mistakes, but AI, unlike humans, doesn't have a heart, doesn't have human emotion. You know, we're not at the point of HAL 9000, you know, from 2001 Space Odyssey, where technology has human interactive quality.
Yeah.
So given all that, and given that AI doesn't have a heart, how do we counter the concerns that AI is taking away jobs, when in fact AI's presence can free people up to do work with a heart, meaningful work? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting topic. Something that I think about quite a bit is, no, it's a good point, because AI is not meant to do every single type of task there is, right? So that's an important thing to know, is it's a tool that's meant to get you from point A to point B, right? Sometimes just like a car, right? There are certain situations where you use a car, but not if you want to go from, say, you know, San Francisco here to Melbourne, right? You kind of, you either need a flight or a ship or something, not a car, right? So it's basically, the goal is to understand, one, you know, can this task, right? How automatable is this task, right? So it's off, if you look at any given task at hand and you assign a score of, you know, how automatable it is. And if the score is kind of high enough, then you can automate that task with AI, and then it keeps doing it over and over again. But when it comes to generating emotional responses, the score is kind of low, meaning when it comes to AI research, we are not really there just yet where AI can, you know, generate like a real emotional response and show empathy. And again, we can program it to show empathy, but it's, again, it's rules based, meaning it's not going to know how to do that. So it certainly opens the door for people to pursue the work with the heart opportunities, because, and at the end of the day, there are many situations where, you know, like, for example, mental health, right? It's an important topic. And it's almost like, if you want to reach out to patients, enable them to reach out to doctors, a part of the task is, for example, booking an appointment or rescheduling. Those are simple tasks that, you know, use AI as a tool to handle the mundane tasks. But a doctor talking to a patient, that then you can't really replace that just yet, right? So I think, and that's just one example. Another example would be creators, right? So it's like, the more we think about it, and people are creating like algorithms and tools to simulate like Van Gogh paintings. But then it's just basically, art is like a form of expression, right? Every time a machine takes over, like, for example, way back, people used to paint portraits, like humans drawing them exactly like that. Then we got the camera, machine replaced that. So people move to impressionist art, meaning something that you cannot just click, right? So it comes from the heart. So humans have been great at delegating the simple tasks to a machine, meaning a camera can do the task. And then you move on to slightly higher art forms where you need a little bit more of the emotional response, like working with a hard opportunity. So I think historically, we have kind of that shift as more or less always happened.
So I think about working with hard opportunities in the last year, I have to think top on that list has to be how quickly several companies came to a workable vaccine to mitigate COVID.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
100%. So it's a good example. And that is exactly why it's, you know, coming together, man, because a pandemic like this, you know, nobody kind of expects. I mean, it is like, you know, if you plot, you know, the likelihood of such an event happening, it's so spectacularly rare that nobody kind of models for it, right? So, but as you said, when it happened, it did happen, it came fast. Humans are very good at adapting to the situation. And then they came together. And as you said, you know, we came up with a workable solution to that.
How is Pluto Shift helping clients with your AI tools? And, you know, what projects are you really excited about that you're working on?
So at the heart of it, the core motivation behind launching Pluto Shift was, how do we leverage AI to impact the world of water? Right? Water is the sector we started. That's where we started. And it's a topic that's very close to my heart. And that's what really motivated me, is that there's this amazing tool, AI. It can be put to use. And then the goal is now to figure out how to make that meaningful for the world. So we started with, okay, water. How can we make it more efficient? Meaning, if you buy a gallon of raw water, how much of that can be converted to clean water? Because anything that's not is wasted, right? So help companies be more efficient with that. Second example is wastewater treatment, right? Meaning, because it's the treating wastewater is an expensive process, right? And they have to meet EPA requirements before the water is disposed of. So help companies keep an eye on that, monitor the process, and make sure that, you know, they meet the EPA requirements and they reduce the cost. Another example is electricity consumption, right? Energy is extremely precious. It impacts the environment a lot. So you as a company, your mandate is to produce 1 million gallons of beverage, right, per day. Now, we help you consume less electricity to meet that requirement, right? So basically, it's just better utilization of these very precious resources, right? It starts with water and energy, chemicals. We work with that too. So I think that's the biggest impact we are having for our customers. And also, on the side, we feel great about the impact we are having on sustainability, meaning by obviously saving electricity makes financial sense, but also it makes sense for the sustainability metrics, meaning they get to spend less on that to produce the product.
I'm really pleased that you are focused on all the things you just mentioned, especially water. We share a friend, Will Sarney, who is one of the preeminent thought leaders on water usage and water quality. And I am familiar with how expensive water treatment has historically been. Israel has to reclaim water. The island nation of Aruba has no groundwater. They have to put the straw in the sea and drink it up. And oh, by the way, the first sip on the straw is the Balashi Beer Company, which I thought was interesting. And they're helping, I guess, to pay for the treatment. So PlutoShift has come up with ways through AI to make that process cleaner, better, and more energy efficient.
That is correct. Yes. It's a simple example is to treat like water treatment, right? There's many moving parts. And a common process is people use reverse osmosis membranes, RO membranes. It is an asset, meaning the more water you clean, the permeability goes down, the asset performance keeps fluctuating. And you just want to make sure that, you know, if you install a few dozen membranes, they're pulling their weight, right? So that's why, because if a membrane is not doing its job, then you know the water recovery rate either goes down or you have to push it harder. We just turn on the tap and the water comes through, right? So most people are not, it's a fairly involved process and it's not easy to do. So we are helping our companies and organizations to monitor this and make sure they're driving efficiency. And also another example would be as you go to places where it's very difficult to get water, as you said, Aruba is a good example, but if you go to more the desert type areas, there, you know, treating salt water, it's an extremely energy-hungry process. I don't know if you've seen the plant down in LA, but it's huge, and they have to work with salt water, and just cleaning like salt water from the ocean is an extremely expensive process, very energy-hungry, and any small efficiency gain that they can drive in that process is a big win, right? So I think there's so many opportunities to pursue in this sector.
And you can imagine on an island nation with 110 to 125,000 people, per capita, that's an extremely expensive proposition for your sustenance.
Yeah. And that's why I think the more efficient this process becomes, I think, and not just here, there are many places around the world where people can't afford clean water. I think the more efficient we make it, the more portable it can become, and we can take that to different parts of the world.
I would imagine one aspect of AI that you're seeing is that it's making innovation happen faster. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So in terms of making innovation faster, and from a standpoint of future of work, I'm wondering how AI might play in helping a distributed workforce where people are in different locations, perhaps working from home, perhaps working from co-location, appear virtually in the same place to be virtual. What are your thoughts on that? Are we coming close?
That's actually a very interesting thing to think about, because purely from like an academic project, right? Mm. It's doable. Meaning if you tell me that, hey, just for the sake of checking if it's possible, can you make, there are these 17 people who are distributed across the world. Can you make them appear like they're sitting in this room in HQ? Yeah, I could imagine one possible way to do it is I could imagine using hologram technology like HoloLens to create like holograms of everyone who's sitting in the room. Then you can make it look like they're sitting next to each other and kind of have that experience. From that perspective, it could be a cool experience that, you know, you can physically live in Spain and your hologram appears in your San Francisco office, right? It's a fun thing to think about. But I think in the last 12 months, we got really good at distributed work, meaning just working together. Even though before that, most of people always thought that, you know, this remote thing, it may or may not work. I don't know how to coordinate and time zones and all the complaints. And suddenly in March last year, COVID said, you know what, you got to do it. Right? There's like no option. And people really quickly adopted. And now it feels like we made it work. It's efficient. And as long as I think it's more of if people are disciplined around how they manage their time and how they communicate with their teams, I think remote, it's, you know, it works beautifully. It works well. You can live wherever you want. And again, purely from like an academic project perspective, we can make that happen where we can make them seem like they're in the same place. But I think it's not needed because it's there. That's my two cents here.
That it's not needed. Well, you may be right. I wanted to ask you about training and skill development. And I would imagine in your role at Pluto Shift, I imagine that is top of mind in that whoever you hire has got to be expertly skilled and agile in their adaptation of new skills. What kind of process do you go through as you're looking at people to join your company? What are the things that you're looking for?
Year after year, right, the speed at which a technology becomes the new standard, it's mind-boggling, right? If you go back like 10, 20, 30 years, a piece of technology, it had like staying power, meaning if it becomes a standard, it, let's say it's going to be here for, you know, at least 5, 10, 15 years, but now it's unbelievable. The new tech, new standard comes over and it kind of knocks the old one off the perch. So I think one of the biggest things that we look for is the ability to learn, right? Meaning, look, whatever you have done in the past, it's great, it's nice, but in about a year or two, that's going to be irrelevant. So the big question is, are you the type of person who has learned how to learn, right? Because many people forget how to learn after they graduate out of college, right? It's just not a thing that people just stop being curious. So I think as long as the learning muscle is limber, it's a great skill set. Again, it's a superpower to have, in my opinion. And so that's one thing. Now, coming to a more of the skill set level, I think a language like Python has become the English of the AI world. Meaning, if you want to work in this field, you better know, like, this is a common language, it's easy to learn. So call it. So if they know Python, it's like you'll survive, right? Just like, you know, in the world, if you know English, you'll be fine across many, many countries. So that's language. And also on top of that, some basics of how software works. Meaning, if you're working on AI, you create something, you write a piece of code. How do you make it work in the practical, in the real world? Because it's very easy to just write a description, but are you hungry enough to see it work in practice? That means you've got to know how things work in the real world. So I would say knowledge of that is important. So I think as long as these three things exist, right, I think everything else is, you know, it's trainable, meaning we bring them on board, we make sure they get coached, they get trained. And obviously once they work in a real environment, meaning you have to deliver for the customers, you learn a lot, meaning holding yourself accountable for you, the team, and more importantly, the customers. I think you'll learn a lot about how to, you know, what it means to deliver value to your customer. Because customers, they don't care that you use the most modern, cool AI algorithm. They don't care, right? What they do care is, what value did you bring to me specifically, right? You can use AI to do that. You can use, I don't know, something else to do it, right? You can use magic if you want. But the point is, I expect this value coming out of this piece of technology or this piece of this engagement. And I think that's, so these are some of the things that we look for when we recruit people.
And I would imagine with water, among other things, you have to hire people who are intently curious about the world.
And more importantly, it's when you think of a topic, if you are really actually bottom of the heart passionate about a topic, you will never stop looking around. You'll never stop learning, right? There's always a willingness to go above and beyond. And I think that's a very important thing in this case, right? It's in water, there's always new things happening. There's always a new development, a new forum, a new, you know, something is happening. So are you keeping yourself apprised of that, of how the world is shaping around you, right? And it's very relevant in terms of water because year after year, it's becoming an even more and more important topic. The ecosystem, the people, the kind of the dangers it poses if you don't take care of it. So many things happening. So do you have that curiosity to, you know, keep yourself apprised of what's happening?
I would imagine the people you're going to be hiring down the road are intently familiar with existential crisis. It's not just it's not just COVID, it's societal. It's the fact that people in the same presence may not agree on the same set of facts. That's a difficult climb for anybody. So given all that, I'm wondering if you've thought about the people who are going to be coming into your workforce 5 and 10 years down the line. What skills or curiosities do you hope that they're learning now in middle school, in high school, in preparatory learning that they can bring, you know, their core skill that they can bring with them to Pluto Shift several years down the line? What are your thoughts?
My context is going to be from the world of AI, right? AI-related skills. And it starts with understanding the nature of data. Meaning, and again, I'm not even talking about AI or machine learning. If somebody gives you, hey, here's a spreadsheet with 30,000 numbers, how do you dissect that? Like, what do you do? Basically, what do you do with it? That's step one, right? So do you have an understanding of how do I look at it? How do I make sense of it? And also just have some basic tools at your disposal, right? If somebody gives you that, right? So if you want to say, I want to quickly plot it, I want to spot the peak, I want to spot the valley, I want to spot clusters in that data. So they're all like basic things. And it just includes basically tools to parse raw data, right? Tools to analyze it, like model it, visualize it, and basically extract some meaningful information that can be understood by human. I don't want you to produce some very deep statistical metric. So just help me understand what it is and what can we do with it. So I think as long as you develop skills and learn tools to understand the nature of data, right, you'll do very well. And not just for AI, it's just in general, as you enter any field, the ability to just understand the nature of any raw data that's being thrown around, I think that's an extremely useful skill set. And depending on what kind of taste that you develop, right, there are jobs such as data scientist, data analyst, right, business analyst, machine learning engineer, data engineer. And so depending on how and where you fall on the spectrum and what you enjoy doing, there are many career paths that you can go after. And again, in terms of destinations, meaning what kind of companies allow you to thrive, right, if you decide to pursue this, is any company that's building like a data engine, meaning there are many companies that convert raw data to useful data, and so in many different contexts, right? Water is obviously one example, but you know, there are companies that do it for marketing data, as you said. There are some companies that do it for financial data. Some company do this for consumer data, right? So many companies are doing this. So if we can be part of a data engine that does something good for the world, I think that's a great place to be. And it just helps you hone that skill even more.
So one last question, and it's one that I haven't even written down. It just came into my head. And I look at you, you're a young guy with a lot of energy and a lot of promise. You're running a great company that's scaling. And yet I reckon with the fact that there's only 24 hours in the day and you still have to sleep and eat and be a human. Right. So how do you carve up your day so that you're hitting all your marks and you're hitting it out of the park, but you still have time for critique, to be curious, to enjoy the world, and perhaps get out of the office and do something that's not about the office?
As I'm doing this more and more, I'm realizing that busy work is what most people get caught up in, meaning, hey, most people want to have full calendars. They want to say they're busy all the time. I would say the opposite is working out great, meaning you have to be kind of free most of the time, because if you're busy, you'll lose the ability to learn, right? You lose clarity of thought, right? That goes away. Your physical fitness goes away. So to me, that's extremely important. Like, for example, I wake up early in the morning to go for a run, right? And the reason I do that is just, to me, if the body is fit, right? That's step one. It just provides you with a clear head in the morning. And because a lot of times when you're doing this, there are so many decisions to be made, and you just can't make them if you have a cluttered mind. Two, if you look at the amount of time you're spending on items where you're not even needed, right? I realized, I've made all these mistakes, but then I realized I'm not needed at like more than half of these meetings or interactions or these decisions. I can just empower people who are here and let them make the calls. Again, They're not going to make 100% accurate calls every single time, but you just have to be okay with it. Because if you do everything all the time, it's just a bad use of your time. So I think deploying your own time, which is, as you said, it's the most precious resource, right? It's not the money. It's certainly not how you spend that, but the time, which is a finite, precious resource, how you deploy it says a lot. So I make sure, one, I have a lot of free time. Two, keep yourself physically fit. And three, just read, right? And I mean like reading actual books, right? Because I just want to stay away from my laptop, phone. I just shut it down, keep it in a different room, and just spend time reading. Because a lot of times, some of my best ideas come when I'm just sitting somewhere and reading. And even though it's the context is unrelated, more often than not, you'll find a tidbit that's kind of relevant to the current problem you are in the middle of solving, right? You're something comes up, you're thinking, okay, what do I do here? And most of the time, the decision is not obvious. So I think just reading helps. It's like jogging for your mind. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy it. I make sure I read a variety of books to keep myself apprised of this. It's a combination of that, but yes, I physical fitness, deploying your time, keeping yourself free, and exercising your mind with some good books. I think that has done like a world of difference. And again, it's not like I woke up and decided to do this. It came through like years of experimentation. I've made those mistakes, but now I feel like I've found my zen, because I think peace of mind, if the mind is at peace, everything looks great. If not, the world looks very chaotic.
And glad you found your zen, and I hope that you enmesh that quality into the people you work with and your clients, because we all need it right now. Pratik Joshi, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Before we depart, I'm wondering if you could point our listeners to your social media.
I am on LinkedIn. You can look me up. Or if you want to learn more about me, go to www.pratikj.com. I'm on Twitter just sharing good stuff, and write a blog post on our company, PlutoShift.com. So basically, we can reach out to me through any of these channels, and I'm happy to have a good discussion.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks, Dan. Thank you for having me, and I really enjoyed the conversation.
Links to Pratik Joshi's social media are provided in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Please join us again for more inspiring stories from people who are real-time reimagining the work that we do and hope to do. You can subscribe to us where you get your podcasts or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. And please take a moment to positively rate and comment wherever you listen to this podcast, because that helps us to connect with new listeners. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.